Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to start off our week with a plan. Yes, we're going to be talking in just a moment with John McGee. He has an associate, Helen Latimer, who put together this book called The Plan. It's about achieving personal balance, career success, and financial strength. And we have John McGee with us today. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure to be here.
There are so many different perspectives regarding success. What do you use as your definition of success?
I think when one achieves the goals that they've set for themselves, it's fair to sit back and say that they are being successful in that aspect of their life.
Now, with Helen, and I know it's hard for you to speak for her, but do you think she would have a similar idea about success?
Yes, I can say that pretty confidently. We've worked together for a lot of years and been friends for a lot of years. We think very, very much in the same mode about this issue. One of the fundamentals of the book, Donna, is that many people are striving for success, may achieve some successes in certain areas of their lives, but are not satisfied. And mm-hmm. We think that's the critical component to look for, being satisfied.
I agree. I think that makes all the difference in the world. And I don't care what a person's economic level is. I think that success in its true form cannot really be measured by dollars. I think it has to be measured with that feeling of, I'm really doing what I want to do. My life is rich with purpose, passion, and I also want to add principle. Purpose, passion, and principle, I think, are very, very important. The principle of your integrity, your ethics. Now, I loved with your book how in the very beginning you had a labyrinth, a little square labyrinth. Now, it was a very easy thing to do, but why was that put right in the front of the book?
Well, what we wanted to bring forward right from the beginning in the plan was that there are different ways that one can achieve an outcome. There are different routes that we can take in the pursuit of different happinesses, different purposes, different goals. And we just wanted to put that right up front to say there's not one way to be satisfied, to be successful. There are different ways. Most of us don't take the time, however, to sit back and create a roadmap that will get us there.
I think that's true, too. Life sometimes, though, can throw us some curves. And in the very first part of your book, you use the illustration of saying, you have been given $25,000 to spend it any way that you want, but it has to be on a vacation. And I don't know about most people, but the first thing you would think, at least with me, if I have $25,000, yeah, I'll take care of this, I'll take care of that, I'll do the other. And I think most people are that way. I could be wrong. But when you said it's going to be on a vacation, you go, excuse me, $25,000 for a vacation? This is a down economy. You're telling me I'd have to spend it on a vacation? Get real, guy. Why did you start off with that?
The example that we chose was really intended to be kind of far-fetched. And yes, this is a very challenging time to be spending any type of money beyond what's really in our means. But we wanted to have something that was really going to help clear the head. Something that's in the book, as you noted, we say you have to spend the money on that. Now, you can spend it in different ways. You can give it to a travel agency. You can plan it yourself. However you choose to do that, you've got to spend the money, and then at the end of it, take a look at how you've achieved, what you've achieved, and where you've been. That was our full intention with that, to just free up the mind to say, for a little while anyways, I'm going to take a look at how great life could be if only.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just think that it's a very novel approach. And I think that's a good thing for any of my listeners to think about. Gee, if you had $25,000 and you had to spend it on a vacation, what would you do? And being comfortable just with that kind of a concept, that's a lot of fun. That would be even a fun game to have with a family, just to say, okay, let's pretend this is what we would do. What would you want to do? Gamble, you know, $15,000 at Monte Carlo. What do you want to do? I think that's a great idea. Now, you use the example of a travel agent because your book, you set it up to be informative, to be challenging to the reader, but you also wanted someone to, I think, step out of their box of whatever they might be accepting at this time in their life. I think there's so many people so troubled with all of the upheavals in today's world that they may think that they don't have a chance to go after any of their dreams, that, gee whiz, they've lost their house, they just have experienced a massive devastation with a flood or a tornado. I mean, there are so many things going on, and they may hear these words and say, gee whiz, you've got to be kidding. I am just sitting in a blooming, mucky mess in my life, and you're talking to me about a plan? How would you show someone how to work this plan?
Well, before I jump into that, I do want to say I'm very impressed with how you just captured that whole, what we were trying to do with it, and I love your idea of doing it with a family. That could be a great game to do, Donna.
Mm-hmm.
The point of asking somebody to take a very hypothetical look, to take a to step back in their life, is to help them to take, maybe for the first time in a long time, a perspective that they can still have, they can still achieve a satisfying life. Yes, things could be rough right now. Things could have gone south significantly from where you were in the past. And so it is hard to say, how do I get there from here? And what we're trying to do is say, if you can take a long look at your life, where you would, at a big goal that you would like to achieve, just for a little while and visualize that, we can then show you an approach that's been used by businesses and large organizations for decades to achieve turnarounds, to achieve big plans out of nowhere. And that's what we've tried to do, is use this same business planning approach with our clients. And we have seen firsthand how successful it can be, how people can, once they take themselves out of this existing situation and allow themselves to look forward, they can help move forward more quickly.
You have a story about a woman, Janice, in the book. This is a woman that, in the eyes of many, would have it all. She's a successful executive. She works, you know, she makes good money. She's got a fine family. But Janice really wasn't satisfied. She had the trappings of success. How did you help Janice to be more comfortable in her own life skin?
One of the things that I did was to help her determine what it is that would make her happy. There are certain exercises that we've got in the books and some of them that we use on a day-to-day basis in my coaching practice. In Janice's case, we started with a very fundamental question. What used to make you happy when you were a little girl? She hadn't thought about that in a long time. She was a fairly prominent senior executive. That was kind of too flaky to think about, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But we asked her to think about things that made her happy and things that could make her happy again in the future. That's a starting point of identifying, and we have worksheets in the book to help you do this, to identify what you most care about. And one of the problems with these so-called life plans that there are so many of today is that they're kind of short-term in nature. You know, it's like, I want to get a new job, or I'd like to have more money in the bank, perhaps get a new car, whatever. But it doesn't really satisfy you in the long term. And usually people stop using those plans after a fairly short while. The approach we've taken starts with what it is at the core that makes you most happy. That is probably what's going to make you most satisfied. Not to say that you've got to change everything, but only to be conscious of what it is that you've got and then try to realize more.
And with her, that was something that she was able to accomplish. And I think one of the objectives is, what are you doing that you really don't need to be doing? That you called it baggage. It's excess baggage that we're carrying. And don't you find, I know I have been guilty of this, don't you find that it's so easy to keep adding baggage on instead of unloading it?
Sure. It almost becomes a habit. During our formulative years, we're accumulating possessions for our house, perhaps setting up our first house. Same thing in our career. We're, you know, getting into the workforce. We're trying to make a little bit more money or perhaps become a supervisor, work our way up the career ladder. And also it's the same thing with relationships, slightly different, but we're often looking for people in our lives that are going to cause us happiness and perhaps that we can, you know, settle down with and have a long-term relationship with. And we accumulate more, thinking that that is going to help even make it better. If this much money causes me happiness, well, then if I had way more in the bank, I'd be even more happier, or career or resources of friends and family. So letting go of things that maybe at one time were meaningful is a big and challenging lesson for us. And when we do, usually we feel far lighter and far more free.
Mm-hmm. And it can be on so many levels. It can be mental, physical, spiritual, emotional. There's a different combination of things. And I think that is a big challenge. Now, you talk about one of the steps, identifying gaps. What would you define as a gap?
Well, what we do is we think that if you have a clear vision about where you want to go, if you identify things that you would like to achieve or have in your life, and then where you are at today, the difference, quite easily stated, that's a gap, what I've got today and what I want to have in the future. So the first thing is to take a look at the shortfall. Maybe I need more education if I want to have a greater job. Maybe I need to go to more outings if I want to meet people. Perhaps I, you know, don't have a savings plan and I want to have money in the bank. These are the gaps that seem kind of obvious when you talk about them. But until you sit down, and again, as you've seen in the book, we've got worksheets in there, and also you can start writing right in the book with some of our questions and opportunities. It helps you identify where you should focus first. That's it, plain and simple.
Mm-hmm. And I think that when you can look with a clarity, and sometimes that's tough. In fact, determining a purpose, for some people, they may say, gee, I don't know, I'm just so dead in the water. Purpose, I just need to be able to pay my bills and get up every day and feel good about it, but I really am not happy. How about using a buddy system with this? I mean, is this, I know you're a coach, as Helen is, but what if someone wasn't able to interact with you? Do you think working a buddy system with someone you maybe really have a respect for or an appreciation for could help someone work out a purpose if they honestly feel like they don't know what it is?
I'm going to give you a qualified yes and no on that one, Donna.
Oh, that's qualified. That's okay. You can do that.
here's where I'm coming from. Sometimes the people that are most meaningful in our life want to help prevent us from hurting ourselves. They don't want mm-hmm. to see us get disappointed with things. And so sometimes when we go to somebody that we love and we say, you know what, honey, I'm going to quit smoking once and for all, and perhaps he or she has seen us try many times in the past, they'll try to let us off the hook because they don't want to see us be disappointed. It could be that you were intending to lose weight, or you were going to save a bunch of money, or you were going to get a new career. Sometimes the ones who most deeply love us are not objective enough to help us. Mm-hmm. That's why a coach or anybody who you don't know as well can certainly help, because they're going to ask you kind of hard questions. What's different this time than it was last time? Why do you feel that purpose is an important thing? Is that because, you know, you've read about it or you've heard other people say it? Tell me why that you believe it. In the book, we've got specific tips for determining your purpose. We start with getting to know the real you and, you know, things that you would care most deeply about. And it's kind of a step-by-step, as you've seen, approach to determining your purpose. if we're using that with our clients, and they say, I intend to show this to my best friend or someone that I love to let them see how we're going, we caution them about doing that too early in the stage for fear that they could get derailed.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because I think of something Napoleon Hill said in one of his books, The Law of Success. That was his original manuscript, and it's really, in my library, quite valued. And one of the things he said is, if you have an objective, often you need to keep it to yourself, because if you share it with other people, they're going to do exactly what you're talking about. So if you were going to have someone like a coach working with you, they really do have to be in that impartial positioning and detached positioning to have that candor with you. And I think that that's very important. Now, assessing strengths and weaknesses, it has been my observation as well as experience that too often we don't honor and respect our strengths. And it's very hard for us to look at them. We focus more frequently on our weaknesses. How would someone go about addressing this? Because what we might feel very comfortable with, like, gee whiz, I can put together 35 chili rellenos in 5 minutes. It's not a problem. I can entertain, you know, the Pope and say, hi, how are you? I got your vino, and it's wonderful, but I absolutely flunk in housekeeping. Now, I know that's a ridiculous example, but I think you get the drift. It's one of these things that we, and someone might say, my God, you'd make a great chef. You ought to be working for the Marriott or something like this and organizing their kitchen. They say, oh, you got to be kidding. This is nothing. How many people do you interact with that depreciate their strengths?
I think it's probably fewer than as many don't. That's a tough question you give me. I don't think I've ever looked at it that way, Donna. But certainly when people are looking at improving their life, they will very often inadvertently focus on their weaknesses. Weaknesses are really internal negative attributes. These are the things that can control us or hold us back from doing things, where we like to focus most on the strengths. And these are the positive things, the talents, the gifts that we've got, that some people, when they come to us, and this is why I'm having a little trouble answering your question directly, they feel kind of shy about talking about their strengths. You know, they feel that's almost bragging. What we use in the book is what's called a SWOT analysis, and I'll tell you, that's strengths, S-W-O-T, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And this is something, again, that we've picked up from the organizational world. Organizations, by their nature, want to be around in a few years, and they want to continue being successful. And so what they do usually on an annual basis is they say, let's take a look at our strengths compared to others. Let's take a look at our opportunities that we're maybe not capitalizing on. At the same time, we have to be conscious of our weaknesses, and we have to be conscious of threats that could prevent us from being successful. This works so easily. It's very easy a process to kind of get into and then realize, mash, I've got a real opportunity here, and I've got a key strength in here, and I'm not capitalizing on it.
And I think that is very, very important, and it's so hard to be able to do that. And again, I think that's where someone as a coach can be very helpful. Creating a dream. Have you encountered much in the way of people when they're talking about their dream that they have an integrity with themselves about their dream? Because so many times we are raised in an environment or there are people around us that have a very strong influence on us, and they have a dream, and they make their dream our dream. And I've known many clients through the years that have gotten stuck in situations because they really weren't doing what they wanted to do, but they were doing what someone else impressed them that was optimum for them. And they were very unhappy with this. How do you deal with that?
Well, the first thing is to help them recognize that they're not alone there. You know, some people feel quite guilty about the fact that they've spent half their life doing something And then they find out that it's not something that was their dream. It was, you know, perhaps a parent or a loved one in some nature that helped guide them that way and trying to do a good thing for them. And so sometimes they feel guilty about addressing that. A couple of things, I guess. One of the things that we like to do, and this is something that, that seems to resonate better with females than males, is to take a look at where you would like your life to be in 10 years. And the exercise is, imagine that it's 10 years from today, and that you have an old friend that you haven't spoken to in 10 years, and you're giving her a letter. You're sending her a letter to tell you what your life is like today, where you're living. Perhaps you have multiple homes. What it is that you do every day. Are you involved in volunteering? Are you at a pinnacle of your career? Do you have family or other people that your old friend that you haven't spoken to in 10 years may not know? And you want to tell her all about the good things that are going on. So it helps an individual kind of concretize what it is that they would like in 10 years. Now, I'll also say for your listeners, guys don't get into that as well as women do. I'm not quite sure why it is. Perhaps many guys have been, you know, beaten up to lose a bit of their imagination or whatever is going on. And one of the exercises we often use in that case is we ask them to imagine that they have just passed away, but somebody's giving them the opportunity to write their own obituary. And that can sound kind of gruesome, but it does help you at least take a look at what you would like to be remembered as and for once you've passed.
Mm-hmm. Well, you bring up some thoughts in my mind. I was having a conversation with some people from India just this past weekend. And in your book, you talk about, and I'm digressing here for a minute, talking about people committed to not doing something. And this is a very, very good statement to make, committed not to doing something. But I want to go back to these people in India. They were saying how in the United States, we are so fortunate because we have choices. In their country, and these are people who go back and forth to India frequently. They were born and raised there. They know the culture inside and out. They say the gap between the rich and the poor is so astronomical. It's unbelievable. And that when a person is born into a particular environment, they have literally no hope of getting out of it. In this country, we have that hope. We have that opportunity. But we must make a commitment to ourselves to do the work. And in the section of your book, you said people commit to not doing something. And we could call it procrastination. We can call it choosing options, making excuses, being the victim, whatever terminology we want to apply to it. But we really do have to put out the effort if we know we have to get something done.
Well, I think you're exactly right. I was asked to speak to a group of academics who plan the curriculum for colleges and universities, not just in North America, but actually worldwide. And the reason they asked me to come in and speak to them, they're planning their course schedules for the next couple of years, is because they've come to the conclusion, particularly in the Western countries, that we're not doing a very good job of teaching our youth, and consequently, you know, many of us as adults don't know how to get past certain issues. They become ingrained in problems that they think are that is who they are, and they leave it like that. If somebody is born into a rich situation, a caste in India, I guess it would be called, they believe that they're entitled and that they can do certain things that others cannot. If somebody is born into poverty, I think this is probably just as applicable in many places in the U.S. as it would be overseas, they believe that they don't have those opportunities. They are, you know, committed to the fact that that's for other people. It's not for me. Mm-hmm. And so by taking a little bit of time with a resource like our book, The Plan, but there are other resources out there too, just to take some time and say, what if? And then to follow a schedule that's used with great success by many individuals, and many organizations, to give that a chance to come together. It happens so quickly. But you have to know what your options, you have to know what options you want so that when you're given the chance to seize it, you can do so. I love the idea of our former governor in California, Schwarzenegger, is not held in good regard by many people today, but one of the things that he did very well in his career was he always had a long-term plan.
Yes, and he did.
And he said that when he had always intended to get into politics, and when the opportunity arose in California, it was far before his plan had been to get there, but because he had a plan that was written down, he knew how to take advantage of it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was able to jump into it. I think that works for young people, for old people, either gender. I just think we need to know what it is that we care about so we're ready to take advantage of it.
I agree with you. There is something in your book I really enjoyed. A woman, Mary, did an exercise, and I thought I'd like to share it with my audience. She said she'd write down a few paragraphs about her ideal day, and you recommend the ideal day exercise can be done by daydreaming if writing things down is not one's style, and one's not to overlook small details when writing or daydreaming about your ideal day. And sometimes it's a small detail that's a clue to something bigger. But I'm going to read this word for word out of your book. Another approach: if you woke up tomorrow and found that you had no financial obligations whatsoever, no mortgage, credit card bills, rent, or debt, how would that change your life and your attitude? Then, what if, in addition to no financial obligations, there was no longer anyone depending on you? No spouse, no family obligations of any kind, no employees, nobody who needed you to do anything for them. Now add to this no job, no boss waiting for you to get work done, no housework to tend to, nothing. Now when you heard this, ladies and gentlemen, how did that make you feel? Woo, I'll tell you, that is a feel-good feeling.
Yes, thank you for sharing that. It really helps one to kind of get the flavor of what opportunities they're not taking advantage of today, what things they're carrying that maybe are not benefiting them or even others. These assumptions that we've got, well, I must do this because, or, well, I always did that because. And once in a while, we should step back and take a look at really what it is that we care most deeply about and why we're not doing that. There's no rules usually that prevent us. It could be that it's going to take a little while to get there, and that's why we have the step-by-step plan in there to help you do it. But very freeing exercise. And I go through my plan once a year. I kind of upgrade it like we're told to do with your insurance on an annual basis. Once you've got the fundamentals done, it's easy. And as you can see your progress towards those things that you just described, it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know we're just about out of time. John McGee has been my guest today. The book is The Plan. John, what is your website? You and Helen put together a very good publication here, and something, it's a size that if you wanted to tuck it into your purse or your briefcase, unless you have one of those little itty-bitty purses, but if you wanted something to take with you, this is a workbook in a way that you can write in this book. And it's wonderful, but it's something that could help you keep on focus. Now, what's your website, John? I interrupted you before you could speak.
No, thank you for that. I appreciate you saying it, Donna. It's theplansite.com. So the book is The Plan, so it's theplansite, SITE.com. And when you go there, you know, you can see that we've laid out the contents of the book, so somebody's not buying something, you know, or wondering if they're going to get what they want. We've had some very generous people write in after they've used the plan, and you can see their comments. And there's some negatives, but mostly positive stuff that they've written in there.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems to work so well, and it's now available in Australia. So that's the third continent that it's been picked up on, and we're getting, you know, comments from people all over the place saying it universally applies.
There's a 30-minute trick inside the book. Some wonderful, wonderful wisdom. And I just think that any time we can utilize a tool that will empower us as an individual, it's worth doing. And I think you'd enjoy exploring what he has at his website, theplansite.com, theplansite.com. www.thebookingsite.com. John McGee, I wish you and Helen the best, and congratulations on your success with the book now that it's reaching into Australia. That's marvelous. And I so appreciate your being a guest on my show today.
Well, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
You're very welcome, John. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break in just a moment. We've got some more good things to share with you. And, hey, in the Pacific Northwest, there actually is a sun. It came out today. Yahoo! We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back, and let me put out our telephone number of 888-815-9756. That's right, it's 888-815-9756. You can call in, and if you'd like me to give you a reading on the air, I'd be delighted to do that. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, just relax. Let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. First of all, I want to thank those of you that are sending me these informative emails. I've got a couple of them that I'm going to want to share today from both readers of my newsletter and listeners. And I thought, wow, this is good stuff, something that we can all pass along to each other. And I think it's always good. It's about food, this particular batch of information that I've got. But I so appreciate your emails and your comments, and I really enjoy learning from you whatever information you want to pass along, and also hearing your comments about the subject matters you'd like to hear on the show. So don't hesitate to send me an email. You can send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's DelphiInternational.com. Well, I wanted to just give you this little bit of information. This came from Elfie, and she said, Donna, as always, I enjoy your newsletter. I'm so glad that I'm on your list, but I want to share something with you today. Maybe you already know this, but in case you don't. She said, a few weeks ago, I wanted to bake some cinnamon rolls and realized that I didn't have enough flour. I went to a store to buy stone burr, which is an unbleached all-purpose white flour. They did not have it, so I bought another brand. Flour is flour, right? Wrong. The rolls that I fixed didn't have the usual texture or taste, almost as if a filler had been added to the flour. That caused me to read the labels on the bag of flour that I had purchased, and I was surprised what all is added to it. Since this was not a familiar brand, I then went to my local supermarket, a major chain, found that the flour I had wanted to purchase had these same ingredients added, from vitamins to potassium bromate. And she highlighted potassium bromate. She said, I looked it up on the internet and found that bromate is a carcinogen. It's banned as an additive in Canada, Germany, and other countries, and almost got banned in this country. She said, there's a lot of information on the internet. She said, today I baked another batch of cinnamon rolls using organic, unbleached white flour from something you can get from a company, and you can get this at a store, bought at a particular health food store. And she said, what a difference. They turned out delicious, just as I remember them from back home. The flour is twice the price of what I paid for the previous brand, but it's worth it. It's kind of ironic that one has to pay double when things are left out and less when they are added. In case you don't already know about bromated flour, I wanted to bring it to your attention. She knows I love to bake. And I thought, wow, this is something I want to share with you. I was talking with a person who is into homeopathic and naturopathic processes. I had been reviewing some medical material that I'm going to be speaking about next month on the show, and we were discussing things, and the comment of the individual that I was talking to, his name was Robert, he said, so often we don't realize how many chemicals have been added into our food chain. And when we become aware of it, then we become very thoughtful and very cautious about what we put into our bodies. And he said, this has been going on since the 1950s. And as we become more educated, we are going to be able to make the changes to our nutritional patternings. We're having illnesses at such a level today that were unheard of in the 1950s and maybe even the 1960s. And I had to agree with him. It really is interesting, as you become educated and you become aware of what to pay attention to. Now, there are preservatives that don't cause negative patterns, and they've been around for a long time. What are some of those preservatives? Vinegar, salt, and sugar. That's right. They have been used for a long, long time. Also, smoking was a way of keeping meat fresh. Study the Native American history, you'll find many, many different ways that food had to be saved. In today's world, we have the good fortune of having more of an abundant food supply than it has been in our known history in the past. But as with all things, we have to become educated about what is going to work for us and what works against us. And that is the process that we are in right now. So I wanted to share that with you. I appreciated Elfie giving that information to me, and I thought you'd be interested in it too. So if you see, when you go to buy flour or you buy any product, if you see potassium bromate, that is a listed carcinogen, and there are government sites that have information about carcinogens. I don't recall at the top of my head right at this moment where you can go to check them out, but look it up on the internet. That's what Elfie did. And she found out more than she ever imagined she'd find out about just this one chemical and a lot of others. Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you would like to chat. 888-815-9756. Again, I want to thank Elfie for sending that information along to me. I have some information about a woman, Audrey Kitagawa. Now, she was raised in Honolulu. And this woman is quite brilliant. She founded the Light of Awareness International Spiritual Family, which is a wonderful organization. She's been involved with the United Nations and just has been with all kinds of organizations. Anything that is going to be empowering other people to respect and honor life and everything that we have on this planet. And I liked what she said, so I thought I would share it with you. She said, see the sunrise and be filled with awe and gratitude to the Creator who paints us a new sky canvas every morning. During the day, take note of those who smile, hold open doors, and give up their seats on crowded buses. Commit to sharing with others similar acts of generosity of spirit and respect, and be that generative center of change that you want to see in the world. At sunset, be filled with wonder and peace at yet another sky canvas that whispers the coming of evening, though filled with darkness, will be punctuated by the light of the moon and the brilliant stars that unveil a map that guides us into the unknown, waiting to be discovered. I really like the way she stated the truths of just being grateful for this experience of life, to be attentive, to be aware. And, you know, right now, with all of the flowers in bloom and the wonderful fragrances that will suddenly fill the air, have you ever been out walking somewhere and all of a sudden something that smells so sweet just drifts right in front of your nose? And it'll make you pause and go, where is that coming from? It smells so wonderful. Well, I've had that joyful experience when I've been out walking. The lilac bushes and lilac trees are in bloom. And you'll walk along and all of a sudden it's as if it just comes along and grabs your attention because of the sweetness and lightness of its fragrance. Oh, it's wonderful. Pay attention to what's going on around you. Be aware of Mother Nature. It is just exciting to see the brilliance of what is produced so frequently without having very little interaction with it. It's really quite amazing. Mother Nature is a wonderful teacher, and I encourage you to seek her out and enjoy just what she has to offer you. You'll learn a lesson every day and then some. I wanted to share with you, don't forget you can give me a call if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Oh, by the way, for those of you in the Pacific Northwest, in the Seattle area, I am going to be giving a program or speaking at a organization on a Sunday in June, and I'll be giving you more information. Everything is just being finalized for that, so that'll be coming up, and I'll let you know what's going on there. So anyway, give me a call if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Insurance policies. Well, if you've been watching the news and you see the devastation of the tornadoes, the floods, the Mississippi doing what it's doing, I mean, this country has just been hit like crazy. We're not the only place it's been hit. There's been places around the world. Of course, we know about Japan, and there's been floods in different places. I was talking with someone in Germany about, an hour before it came on air, and they were saying how they are sort of having a drought. There's been no rain, and their weather is a lot like the Pacific Northwest. Weather fronts are changing. The Icelandic volcanoes are deciding to have some hiccups and creating a lot of discomfort. Well, that's Mother Nature at work. And of course, we all like to be sure that we have insurance policies. Well, I have found out some information by an Aaron Crow that said, you know, it's so important to be able to protect ourselves. And we all usually pay for insurance, whether it's our automobile, our homeowners, or renters. But there are six policies that an agent said, and this was agreed to by a number of other agents, that really you should think very carefully about before you spend your money on them. And one of them, the very first one that they mentioned, is accidental death and dismemberment. Now, they say free or low-cost policies offered by employers will usually cover accidents involving death or dismemberment. So you don't need to buy it on your own, but if you are self-employed, you may think $15 a month is a very low premium, but according to the insurance agents, they say there are other things that you could spend that $15 a month on that would serve you better than that. Comprehensive and collision coverage for old cars, well, if you don't have a lot of value there, that can be saved, that money can be saved. Once the car is paid off, your car's value drops well over 50%, A lot of people will continue to pay for that comp, and that's a choice. But if the collision and comprehensive coverage costs more than 10% of the car's value, it's not worth taking and having that on your policy. And I've got a couple of other tips here, but I'll share it with you at another time. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back. Don't forget, you can give me a call if you'd like to have an intuitive reading on the air, 888-815-9756.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. I want to share with you the information on my guests coming up. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about animals. The publication is titled Cherished. Barbara Abercrombie is going to be my guest tomorrow. And these are stories about all kinds of different critters and why they're so special to the people that have them. Just going to be a lot of fun talking about that. And then Losing Control, Finding Serenity. Daniel Miller is going to be sharing with us some tips and insights on how we can manage our lives. And then Donald Vandermart on Thursday. We're going to be talking about the good among the great. Lots of times people become very, very famous, and they may not be such a nice character. We've seen a few personalities in the news lately that have power, prestige, and position, and they're really skunk. So we're going to be talking about people that aren't, people that have acquired the good, the positive, the wealth, whatever it is, the fame, and they really are about making life better. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking about bullying. And Joe is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about his personal story titled Yubby. That's right, Yubby. And this is a wonderful guy. If you met him in person, he looks like a street biker. I'll never forget meeting him at the National Publicity Summit. He just absolutely was not what I would have expected. And he's the most wonderful person. So he has got a great story to tell, and we're going to be sharing that with you. So we'll be doing that as the week goes on. So I hope you'll tell your friends. A lot of good things to share. Email, how much privacy do you have? Well, pretty much, not much. You know, in the internet, it's as if we are bare and naked. There is just very little privacy at all. And Mark Gunham, who is the CEO of a New York digital marketing agency, he said, we've got all kinds of peeping Toms, digital peeping Toms. He said, the one is the government, but also there are employers, future employers, marketeers, and what they call data miners. I've never heard of that term. Data miners who make billions of dollars out of buying and selling the details about you. a little unsettling? You bet. I was very unsettled when I got through with this information. The example was given, let's say you send an email to someone in St. Petersburg. You may find that you're suddenly getting information about traveling. How's that? Why is that being done? Well, one of these data miners will have found out about you. They're piggybacking in on your system. And they go, well, I can sell this to this, to that, to that, to that. And people are paying to have access to your email. Now, there is a situation with Google saying it's going to be refining its system because they do a lot with ad campaigns. And it's amazing. There is a challenge. But whether you use Gmail or any other service, no matter how much information you volunteer when you set up your account, any email you send from your home is likely to be associated with a specific IP, Internet Protocol address. Law enforcement can trace you. Do you know that prosecutors across the United States have successfully sought to subpoena records from Internet service providers to demonstrate links in criminal cases? NCIS. There you go. It's right there. Now, there's something that they said here that can be a little unsettling. If you use something like Guerrilla Mail, it allows you to create a temporary email that'll last an hour, and you can log in from a public location, such as any place that has a free Wi-Fi internet access. But disposable email addresses, and a lot of people use them, are not going to be used by most people. So, you need to be aware of something. And this comes from a Dr. Darren Hayes. He's a Pace University professor, and he's an expert in data security. And I'm quoting him. He said, the legal presumption is that no matter what you do on your employer's network, there should be no expectation of privacy. In other words, your employer doesn't have to tell you that the computer on your desk and everything that passes through it is being automatically monitored. It is not a joke. They say if an electronic mail system is used at a company, the employer owns it and is allowed to review its contents. I have some more things that I'll be sharing with you this week. Do you know that there are a lot of ways to track your web surfing history? They can even track what you're watching on television. And do you know there is a big commentary going on right now about how police are able to take your cell phone and download everything that you've got on that cell phone without your permission? All kinds of things going on. We live in a much different world, and the changes are occurring with a rapidness that is just amazing. So just wanted to share a couple of those tidbits. And I wanted to share something about technology with you today. There is a bullet train in Japan that will just go from one city to another. Their speeds go all the way up to 185 miles per hour. However, that came about after a lot of research. During the initial test, when they tried to do the bullet train, whenever the train went from the outdoors and into a narrow tunnel at high speed, it produced a sonic boom that would shake and rattle windows. It could be as far as 400 yards away. So there had to be a solution. There was an engineer. His name was Eiji Nakatsu, and he loved birds. And he said, there's got to be something in nature that manages sudden changes in air resistance as a part of daily life. And he found it. The bird, I thought it was going to be the hummingbird. It wasn't. It was the kingfisher. Now, this is why he chose the kingfisher. It dives from the air, which is a low-resistant medium, and into water. Highly resistant one, only a tiny splash. So what he did, he redesigned the nose of the bullet train in the image of the kingfisher's beak. The engineers reduced the noise and cut electricity costs. And nobody's windows are shaking anymore. Amazing. What do you look at? I mentioned to you earlier in the show, check nature out. She can teach us a lot. This is Donna Sebo. It's been a delight being with you. Thank you so much. And remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent day. Enjoy it. And be grateful for your abundant blessings. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.